Hello, everyone, and welcome to NGF News. My name is Alec, and Joshua Cheatham is here as well. Today, for the topic of the week, we have a pretty interesting one. One that I don't know how this came to be, but we were just thinking of stuff, and this one was an interesting one. So the topic is incentivizing oil giants to turn. Now that sounds probably unrealistic as hell, but. You know, we do these because, one, it's kind of like a kind of a theory-based thing, or it's an idea, and not so much like, you know, this is going to happen. But this is an interesting one, and we wanted to do this one because, yeah, it sounds unrealistic, but it's something that can be done. Yeah, oil giants often kind of forget that they're, you know, in the energy business and not so much in the oil business. And let me explain that. These oil giants are providing a thing, a substance, whatever it is, a product, that in turn turns into energy. Now that thing is, you know, for them it's oil, but for other, you know, green-based companies, it's either solar panels, wind-based products, whatever it is. But in general, both of these kind of companies, renewables and oil, they're in one kind of sector, which is energy. So, these oil giants need to find ways, because times are going to change. You know, whether or not, you know, whether these oil giants like it or not, the world will be green at a certain point in time. They need to find a way to change the product in which it's offering energy to something more green. It is nature. Things change. Life changes. And they need to start focusing green. But they haven't kind of started that process. I mean, they have. Because all these oil giants say they're offering, you know, they're putting money into the research into green energy technologies and testing them. But multiple, you know, sources that I've read and multiple reports from different news organizations say, like, you know, they kind of BS those to try to show that they're working towards it. But their main priority is oil. And, you know, that's partly not to blame because they've centered their entire infrastructure, business plans, everything around oil. So for them to make a shift to green would require their entire business strategy, from the infrastructure, the products, everything, etc., to change to support green. But again, they have to understand they're in the energy business. And if they were to survive in the energy business, they need to change their perspective to green. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And I totally agree. I mean, the world's probably not going to 100% shift, but it's definitely going to be like a 70-30, 80-20 thing in the next 25 years, for sure, because of just, like you said, the nature of how things go, the nature of advancements in technology. Oil is not going to be as required, and also oil is going to dry up eventually. Natural gas, you know, we'll be able to have for, I think, a long time, but oil will dry up eventually. So just to kind of go over some kind of facts here. Let's look at who are the big six. Who are the guys who make the biggest money? That'll be BP, Shell, Chevron, Total Energies, Eni, and Exxon. All these are $1 billion. And when we mean $1 billion, B with a big B. Shell being the highest, $323 billion in revenue a year. ExxonMobil being the lowest at 36. Chevron, 200. Total Energies, 218. Eni revenue at 108. I couldn't find a very good BP one that was accurate on an accurate website, so I decided to leave them out. That total came out to $887.36 billion. I'm pretty sure if you add BP in there, it'll probably be $1 trillion. So, $1 trillion of revenue. Each company experiences anywhere from 15% to 25%. Even 35% in Shell's space of profits, not revenue, profits. 35% of $323 billion is roughly, let's say $140 billion that they have in basically cash. They have other assets outside of that. So, our point of goal is to kind of see how these companies could be incentivized to build or invest in green tech. Of all the investors in green tech, Shell is the largest with $4 to $6 billion from 2016 till about 2020, which those have largely slowed down since the pandemic.
And the reason they're making all this money is because green energy products, as of now, is still not profitable. That's why they're not incentivized to do it. If they can't, if they're making a product that they can't sell, they're just going to stick to oil, because oil sells anywhere. You know, there is not one place that doesn't take oil. Oil, we're so reliant on oil. Oil is required for everything. And that's why they'll keep digging it until there's a shift in supply and demand. If there's a high demand for green energy technologies, which we will soon, they will have no choice but to follow the market. And that's what that's why I'm saying that they're in the energy business and not so much the oil business. Because if they're in the oil business, they're focused on supply and demand for oil, but these businesses are focused on supply and demand of energy. So until green becomes profitable, they're not going to do it. And you know, how do we make green profitable? To make green profitable, there needs to be more time spent in R&D. But R&D takes money. It needs money to create something, to go from a prototype that's very expensive to everything, to then become a product that there's a bunch of it. It's cheap, but it's effective. That process takes years. And when I say years, I'm not saying like 1 to 2 years, oh, boom, you have something that works fantastically. You know, producing solar panels is still expensive. Producing wind-based products, still expensive. All those things are still expensive because, one, we don't have the research, and we don't have the capabilities yet to mass produce these as a fast level. We have refineries everywhere. We have spent the time and effort, the money and everything to build refineries everywhere, drill sites everywhere. We are now in that transitionary period where we're trying to do the same thing, but with green. Things take time. Things take 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Who knows how long it'll take. But how can we speed up this kind of process from prototype to producing a product that is always there? And it starts with, you know, subsidies and incentives. You know, everyone says subsidies, subsidies, subsidies. But how can these oil giants actually use the subsidies and incentives that they're given by governments? Well, you know, in my opinion, I think the subsidies shouldn't go directly to the oil company as itself as an entity, but directly to the R&D department of every individual oil giant. SMEs as well. SME collaboration with these oil giants. Because SMEs that are already focused on green energy technologies, they already have their infrastructure, business plan, and everything set. They need to build those green tech. By the time it takes for oil companies and oil giants to fund their R&D center, recreate a business plan, the infrastructure, and the strategies they need to go green, there's already someone out there that's already doing that type of stuff. So subsidizing and incentivizing collaboration, subsidizing the smaller green firms, and incentivizing large oil giants to work together, you'll then create a situation in where now you have contractors of oil giants, similar to how there's contractors working with the U.S. government, but now you have contractors for oil giants that take care of the stress of the R&D departments of the oil giants. And that's not to say that they can't keep them. What I'm saying is they could keep them in collaboration with the SMEs of smaller entities that are working on green energy technologies and create kind of a contract-based agreement, because they, like you said, have the money for it. They got B with a billion. You know, big B. You know, they don't got those small Bs. They got big Bs. And they can use those big Bs to create contract-based programs.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's just so much money and not enough is being put aside to use it. In 2018, I mean, all the budgets of those top six firms spent a combined 1% of their budget to invest in green tech. Total Plant has a plan to invest $500 million a year in green tech. No one really knows exactly what that plan is. Chevron set aside $100 million in a fund to energy for the future. But, you know, these are just minuscule investments. So, you know, they say come up with a plan. You know, here's a plan that I have in my brain that they should use in order to actually get these companies to do what we want them to do, and that is move green. The first thing the United States government needs to do is say, okay, we want green energy. We want it in the next, well, we wanted it by 2025, but that was not going to happen. Now it's 2030 and probably most likely going to be pushed back to 2050. How do we do this? The first way is we tell all oil giants, every single person, we're going to be like, okay, we are going to give you unlimited access to every single oil field we have to drill. Unlimited. For the next however many X years, we're going to give you unlimited. As a condition, you cannot have excess, you cannot have gas prices be over $3 a gallon, as well as oil barrels cannot be over $50 a barrel. Period. Done. Make sure that the middle class is not being affected by this. Make sure that we lower inflation and keep manufacturers able to afford cost of manufacturing and shipping and all those things. But as a condition, they have to give up 5% of their profits, cash profits, every single year to investing in green tech. This will be done by with consulting companies like McKinsey and Company, like Boston Consulting Group, like Booz Allen, like Deloitte, and the federal government, who will work to invest that money, along with contributions from the federal government, into smaller or large-sized R&D research, or who already have solar companies, wind companies, or create their own wing, or all together, to work on creating new green tech, because we are not by incentivizing them to unlimited access, as well as potential tax breaks. I would say probably, you know, if they do this, they get 20% tax deductibles on their profit. But they have to invest at least 5% of their profits, not the revenue, cash, that will be overseen by consulting companies and the federal government to be distributed to companies to help fund R&D research. Because we need to have multiple layers of kind of like a board so that they can oversee what's going on to make sure that they are actually doing what they were promised. This will help the middle class, this will help investment, and this will grow our green tech sector, in my opinion.
Yeah. And to argue something you said about having them set aside a certain amount of cash dollars to invest into green tech, I think we should have a quota system in which these companies, there's a piece of legislation that says if you are an energy-based business, you know, and you have the funds for it, you know, we can't just say every oil or every single energy business has to complete this quota. You have to have a certain amount of income to support this kind of initiative where there is a quota that you have to achieve by the end of the year, meaning that quota is also variable about around the amount of revenue that your business is making. But you need to produce at least one solar panel, two solar panels, have a field of solar panels somewhere, power a grid somewhere, kind of have a quota basis. And because companies can set aside for R&D, but you'll have a situation in where, oh, we are using our money to invest in green and we're looking into it. And that's what the looking into it will be the next thing for 5 years until they're like, okay, we found it. We create a quota based system. This will push companies to say, okay, well, we need to do something by the end of this year to do this and that. And, you know, people can argue that this is, you know, going against kind of like the idea of owning a business and being free to own a business. But look at government contractors. They have a contract period, money set aside, and the government says you have X amount of days to complete this. You have two years. This is a 3-year contract before it's over. That's a quota-based system. They have an allotted amount of time to finish X project. Are we saying that these oil giants will become U.S. government contractors? I mean, they already are. They technically are. They sell oil to the government. They're contracted by the government to say, hey, we need oil for our country. Why not create new government contracts with good payouts that say, complete this amount of quota. Complete this amount in this quota, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree, because you're right. If we just tell them to do research, they'll drag out that research for years to build up and rack up profits. So I agree. I think They should have, if you're Shell, you should be able to put, depending on how US government regulatory see this, let's say, 2 acres of solar farm somewhere so that they have an energy system. Or, they do they update they have up they update electric grids. They send out money and update 5 electric grids a year. I think that could be something that could be very important to add to, the contract, because the contract has to be, give and take by both sides, because they're going to get unlimited profits plus tax breaks. We need the research now, and to have what we know works, like solar panels, put out now, so that we can basically transform our con our energy sector. Let's take also a step outwards and look at the big picture. The United States electrical grid sucks. It's horrible. The minute someone hacks into it, it's going down and will be out for days. It's horrible. We saw it in Texas. When it froze over, it was done. When there are big snowstorms in the Northeast and the North, power's out. It's done for weeks on end. It's over. Once something bad happens, it's over. So we need these things now, updated grids now, so that when events like freezes that happen in Texas, which never happen, occur, snowstorms, which occur all the time. I never understood that. We get snowstorms all the time, but our power goes out for a week. It's like, why haven't we fixed this problem? But that's a whole other story. But we need to prepare for these things in the hurricane season in the South, Tornado Alley in the Midwest. Prepare for these things so that we don't have to go, and civilians don't have to go weeks without power, weeks without food, because we're not prepared in our electric grid. This needs to be a public and private partnership in this case, because our grid does suck. So we need this now. So I think that's definitely a good thing to add to it.
And by now, we're not saying like tomorrow. Rebuilding a power grid to support renewables, or building a new power grid to support renewables, can take anywhere from 1 to 5 years. But it's a start. Having one entire grid, it could start in a small town, it could start wherever. But having just one renewable grid, 100% renewable grid, is better than having none at all. Because then you'll have the towns, let's say, in Texas, that are run by renewable grids. They have the batteries that have been charged by renewables. And if their freeze over happens, they're safe. They're good. So it's a good way to get these oil giants to experiment with renewable grids, and get these, not even renewable giants, but anyone in the energy sector to experiment with renewable grids. Now, getting all this going is seems unlikely and unrealistic, but we have like companies like Saudi's Aramco already focused on green tech. I mean, I've read something where they want to expand their plans to green transition, and by 2020, I think it was 2060, Aramco just wants to be net zero when it comes to emissions. So, if companies have this kind of target, sorry, not Aramco, the entirety of Saudi Arabia wants to be net zero by 2060, fully decarbonized with the help of Aramco, which is big oil giant. If they can do it, the rest of the world can do it too. Aramco is as big as Shell and all these other big names in the oil game, because they understand their perspective is energy, not oil. They're in their energy business. So this is kind of a nice vision to have in a model that other companies can follow and say, okay, they're going to do it. They're slowly decreasing the production of oil every single year by minuscule amount, but there's going to be a transition where they're down to little to no oil being produced, but a lot of energy being produced by the renewables that they've created by recycling profits into investment in their refineries, but also using some of that investment from refineries into their green energy programs.
Yeah, and to say so that no one has been doing anything about investing in green tech is not true. The federal government has been doing it for a couple of years now, but especially during the Biden administration. But there's only so many billions they can give out. So that was kind of the point of this episode was to show that big oil companies who have trillions, not just billions, trillions of dollars to invest in green tech can put aside a couple of billion, I mean, 20, 40, 50, 100 billion dollars between them to invest in green tech and companies that work on this and have consulting firms help move them around and have the federal government also provide grants to increase the and decrease the amount of workers that could be on a project to build this green tech. So this is some place where the public-private sector really has to get together and work together to invest this kind of money, because the government is just handing out money here, money there, and they're telling the private sector to work on this, but government money can run out. And when companies, and we're seeing this in the defense sector at the moment, when companies don't get their government contracts, their whole world stops. It just stops. Because they can't, they don't know where the money's going to come from. So if their money won't stop because just the government isn't getting their appropriations and giving out their grants, the private sector could do the same and give out their money so that these companies don't have to just halt and say, we can't move on without the government contract. They can keep going with private loans and private sector credits from big companies.
Yeah, and it kind of goes back to what I was saying, to subcontracting that work. Because they don't have the team and the infrastructure to do it. But there's a small company with like 500 employees, 100 to 500 employees, who have that infrastructure and capabilities and technologies to do the research. So subcontracting will be huge if we're going to do this type of work. And yeah, like you said, you know, the government, very variable with how they fund things.
Especially nowadays.
Oh, yeah. It's terrible. They need some sort of like secure funding, and the government right now is showing that they're not like a place to get secure funding from. Everything's at a stop. So they have the money, they have a customer, which is governments. They could use their profits to subcontract. And this is not something that, you know, will be done just in the United States. This is something that's going to happen worldwide. The EU and their oil giants. Already the European investment banks, they're big on carbon projects and carbon emissions reduction projects and digital economy. So the EIF, which can also play an important role onto this as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that could play an important role into this. And I would love to see the European investment funds and the EU also start their own kind of subcontracting division where it's like, okay, we have oil giants in the United States. We're losing to the United States. Let's offer some of our own programs and own government contracts as well to get them going as well. Because this is a global effort. Yeah, you know, this is not just something where it's regional based. I mean, I would be happy to see if the United Nations steps in and says, hey, we should do some contracting work as well, which is unlikely, you know, for the United Nations. But the United Nations set these goals and now they want to back it. They have the funding from countries all over the world. They should show some action and do these kind of programs as well.
Absolutely. I mean, we discussed when we went on our study abroad over the summer with one of the World Health Organization leaders that they say that, you know, private companies don't really work with the UN because they're, you know, donors. I think that's a little ridiculous because we had a whole episode on this before. I've probably said this twice. But if a company comes in and says, I will give you the United Nations $20 billion to distribute to countries to help create research and build and develop green tech, the United Nations basically is obligated to say no. And I think that is a ridiculous sentiment. Mm-hmm. What country or a company can get so much clout, so much good, a very good reputation if they just drop $20 billion to the UN to help distribute to countries to build green tech? Why is that not beneficial? Why is the United Nations sitting there and saying, oh, it's a conflict of interest? I don't care at this point. We have a system. We have a system and a structure for the past, because 1945, that the United Nations has founded. It's not working. It's very flawed. How about we switch it up? And if it doesn't work, we switch it up again. But we're not doing anything to switch up how we use the international community in the United Nations and companies to collaborate. We collaborate with NGOs. Whoopee. They don't have enough money. Like, they don't have the money that Shell has to push green tech, that Deloitte has to invest and push in green tech, that Citigroup has, or Bank of America has to invest in this kind of stuff. So I think we need to start reanalyzing our strategy on the international level as well.
Yeah, and they have, these international programs have programs that connect businesses to government leaders and businesses to businesses around the world. But we need a more direct approach where if you're a business and, like you said, want to invest into research and development, but there's a conflict of interest, why can't there be a system in which where, okay, the United Nations is like, I can't take that money, but there is someone in a country, a company in another country, that will help you. Or if there's a minister in another country that is willing to connect you to the right people. I don't understand why this is not a thing. Why don't we create a branch of the United Nations where if you're a business, you're an oil giant, whoever you are, and you want to help with these SDGs, that there should be its own kind of piece to the United Nations. We're the United Nations for a reason. Why not unite the people within the nations in which we are united as a whole to people around the world? Yeah, I when we went to the WHO and they said that, I was furious. I'm like, this.
What better layers of protection do you have of oversight? So, oil giant, he's giving away $20 billion. Now, it would probably never be that much, but let's say it's $1 billion. That's $1 billion. He's going to want to know where the money's going. So he's overseeing the United Nations. The United Nations is distributing that money to countries. So they're overseeing countries, which in turn are overseeing the United Nations, making sure they get that fund, which in turn, those countries are probably sending their companies out to do that work where they're overseeing the companies are overseeing it, vice versa. The people are overseeing it. There's like 8 layers of oversight. If something goes wrong, someone will see it. And someone will and should report it. I guess that's the morality in me, thinking that most people are moral in an optimistic standpoint. But realistically, I do believe that if they are driven by clout and driven by profit, that in the end goal, that company that made the donation will want every single step of the way to make sure that that money goes. Or the United Nations, or that country that receives it, or that contractor that gets it will want to oversee every step of the way where that money goes. There's multiple layers of oversight in this situation. So I don't understand what the big issue is. That's my thing. And again, it's probably me being a moral, optimistic person, but I think it's a new strategy. It's somewhere to start, somewhere to change the way we're moving because it hasn't been working.
We could keep that optimistic approach. I'm sure one day it'll happen. But, I mean, going back with the oversight kind of idea, if these businesses, let's say, I want to bring it back to the subcontracting idea. These businesses, these oil giants, have the most oversight of any, like the amount of money they have the team to support the oversight, and vice versa, if you're another entity doing the subcontracting work. So there is no need of worry whether or not promises are going to be kept, because promises need to be kept if we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars. Now, if you're in the United States and you don't know where half of your money is, that's a different story. You know, that's a lack of poor oversight. And there's been constant claims of poor oversight within government. So, but the private sector is good at oversight. They know when something's wrong real quick versus government. In my opinion, that's my hot take for this, is that governments suck at oversight, private sector is better.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean,
I don't know if even that is a hot take, but that's my hot take.
When the Pentagon said that they had $3 billion, you know, of money, just they had no idea where it went, within a couple of months, contractors were like, we found it. It's gone, but we found it. Like, they found at least $1 billion of it. So it's like, okay, well, if they can figure it out that quickly, we can, and the Pentagon can't, how about we have Booz Allen overlook it? You know, whatever. I'm just naming Booz Allen because it's on top of my mind. other companies to look at it. Oversight, it's not that hard. It is hard, it's complex, there's a lot of moving parts, but if you put the right teams and the right machines together and you have multiple layers of it, the money will be found. The progress will be made, and the collaboration will push humanity to the next step.
And the thing is, like, they have stakeholders within, let's say you're an oil giant. You have stakeholders to please. You have shareholders, stakeholders. You need to know what is going on at every single process. If you're an oil giant trying to turn green, you need to be on top of things because you're going to lose public confidence in your company whenever you're trying something new. That is how stakeholders are, shareholders are. They're not really, they're pretty conservative people when it comes to their money. So this happening where oil giants try to turn green will show, and if it will be an experiment at first, but it will show to shareholders and stakeholders that the green energy sector is a great place to invest. And it's kind of like the oil giants oversight, where their stakeholders and shareholders are the oversight. Because if they're not doing well, people who've invested in them will be pissed at the lack of work, at the lack of promises, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Again, another layer of oversight.
Yeah. So I think that's it. I think we've exhausted everything, Josh. So.
Yep. I'm all good for here.
Awesome. Well, thank you all. I hope you enjoyed this topic of the week. It's been this one was an interesting one. I like this one.
But yeah, I did too.
I hope you enjoyed it. We'll bring more of these like this episode, and we'll catch you in the next Ladies Global Developments episode.